The fire had died down to white ash, but the treetops were black against the paling morning sky. Lothar threw off his blankets and scrambled to his feet. The horses were stiff with alarm, their ears pricked forward, staring towards the open glade whose silver grasses just showed through the screen of Mopani forest. The lion roared again, and he judged it as a half-mile distant in the direction in which the horses were staring. So clearly does the roar of a lion carry in the night that an inexperienced ear would have reckoned it much closer and been unable to pinpoint the direction, for it played ventriloquist tricks upon the ear. Once more the awful cacophony filled the forest. Lothar had never heard one of these beasts behaving like this, such sustained anger and frustration in those great blasts of sound. And then his head jerked with shock. In the lull between this roar and the next, he heard another unmistakable sound, a human scream of utmost terror. Lothar reacted without thought. He seized the head halter of his favourite hunting horse and leapt to its bare back. He socked his heels into its ribs, urging it into a gallop, and guided it with his knees, turning it toward the head of the glade. He lay forward on the horse's neck as the low branches lashed past his head, but as he broke into the open glade, he straightened and looked about him frantically. In the few minutes since he had woken, the light had strengthened, and the eastern sky was a throbbing orange-yellow. There was a single tall mopani tree standing detached from the rest of the forest, surrounded by the low dry grass of the glade. High in its branches was a huge dark mass, and indistinct but violent movement made the branches of the mopani wave and thrash against the sky. Lothar turned his horse towards it, and the thunderous growls of a lion were punctuated by yet another high-pitched shriek. Only then could Lothar distinguish what was happening in the top of the mopani, and he found it hard to believe. "Great God!" he swore with surprise, for he had never heard of a lion climbing a tree. There was the great tawny cat high in the waving branches, clinging with its hind legs to the trunk and reaching up with vicious swipes of its forepaws towards the human shape just beyond its reach. "Yah! Yah!" Lothar worked his horse with elbows and heels, urging it to its top speed, and as he reached the mopani he flung himself from its back and rode the shock of landing with his legs and back. Then he danced out to one side, head thrown back, rifle at high port across his chest, trying for a clear shot at the animal high above him. The lion and its victim made an indistinguishably confused silhouette against the sky. A shot from blow could hit one as easily as the other, and there were thick intervening branches of the mopani to deflect his bullet. Lothar dodged sideways until he found a hole in the branches, and he flung the rifle up to his shoulder, braced himself over backwards, aiming straight up, but still reluctant to chance the shot. Then the lion snatched the human shape half off its precarious perch, dragging it down, and the screams were so piteous, so agonized, that Lothar could not wait longer. He aimed for the lion's spine, at the root of the tail, a point as far as possible from the twisting body of its victim, who was still clinging with desperate strength to one of the mopani branches. He fired, and the heavy Mauser bullet smashed into the base of the lion's spine, between its bunched and straining haunches, and tore upwards, following the line of the vertebrae for the span of a hand, shattering and crushing the bony knuckles, destroying the great nerves of the legs at their roots, before ripping out again from the centre of the lion's back. The lion's hind legs spasmed, the long yellow claws retracted involuntarily into their sheaths in the leathery pads, loosening their grip on the mopani bark, and the paralysed legs could hold no longer. The great tawny cat came sliding and twisting and roaring down out of the tree, crashing against the lower branches as it fell, arching back on itself, snapping at the pain in its shattered spine with gaping pink jaws. It brought its human victim down with it, its foreclaws still hooked deeply into tender flesh, shaking and throwing the frail body about with its convulsions. They hit the earth in a tangle with an impact that jarred up through the soles of Lothar's boots. He had jumped clear as they came down through the branches, but now he ran forward. The lion's back legs were splayed behind it like those of a toad, and it lay half over the human body. Now it reared up on its forelegs, pinned by its paralyzed hindquarters, and as it dragged itself towards Lothar, it opened its jaws and bellowed. The stench of its breath was carrion and corruption, and hot, stinking froth splattered his face and bare arms. Lothar thrust the muzzle of the Mauser almost into that dreadful mouth, and without aiming, he fired. The bullet entered the soft palate at the back of the lion's throat, tore through the back of its skull, and erupted in a fountain of pink blood and brains. For a second longer, it stood, braced on its stiff forelegs. Then, with a gusty sigh, its lungs emptied, and it rolled slowly over onto its side. Lothar dropped the Mauser and fell on his knees beside the huge, twitching yellow carcass, and tried to reach the body beneath it. But only the bottom half protruded, a pair of slim, brown, naked legs, the narrow, boyish loins bound up in a tattered canvas kilt. Lothar sprang up and seized the lion's tail. He flung all his weight upon it, and sluggishly the furry carcass rolled over onto its back, freeing the body beneath it. A woman, he saw at once, and he stooped and lifted her. Her head, with its thick mop of dark, curling hair, flopped lifelessly, and he cupped his hand at the back of her neck, as though he were holding a newborn infant, and he looked into her face. It was the face of the photograph, the face he had glimpsed so long ago in the field of his telescope, the face that had haunted and driven him. But there was no life in it. The long, dark eyelashes were closed and meshed together. The smooth, darkly tanned features were without expression, and the strong, wide mouth was slack. The soft lips drooped open to reveal the small, white, even teeth, and a little string of saliva dribbled from one corner of her mouth.
No!
Lothar shook his head vehemently. You can't be it. No, it's not possible after all this. I won't... He broke off. Out of the thick, dark mane of her hair, a serpent crawled down across the broad forehead towards her eye, a slow, dark red serpent of new blood. Lothar snatched the cotton bandana from around his neck and wiped away the blood, but it flooded down her face as fast as he could clear it. He parted her crown of curls and found the wound in her shiny white scalp, a short but deep cut where she had hit one of the Mopani branches. He could see the gleam of bone in the bottom of the wound. He pressed the lips of the cut together and wadded his kerchief over it, then bound it in place with the bandana. He cradled the injured head against his shoulder and lifted the limp body into a sitting position. One of her breasts flopped out of her skimpy fur cloak, and he felt an almost blasphemous shock. It was so pale and tender and vulnerable. He covered it swiftly and guiltily, then turned his attention to her injured leg. The wounds were frightening. Parallel slashes that had ripped deep into the flesh of her calf, cutting down to the heel of her left foot. He laid her back gently and knelt at her feet, lifting the leg and dreading the sudden spurting rush of arterial blood. It did not come. There was only the dark seepage of venous blood, and he sighed.
Thank you, God.
He dragged off his heavy military greatcoat and placed the wounded leg upon it to keep it out of the dirt. Then he pulled his shirt over his head. It had not been washed since the rock spring 2 days before, and it stank of his stale sweat. Nothing else for it. He ripped the shirt into strips and bound up the leg. He knew that this was the real danger. The infections that a carrion eater such as a lion carried on its fangs and its claws were almost as deadly as the poisons of a bushman's arrowhead. The claws of a lion particularly were sheathed in deep scabbards in the pads. Old blood and putrefied meat lodged in the cavities, an almost certain source of virulent mortification and gas gangrene. "We have to get you to the camp, Santen." He used her name for the first time, and it gave him a tiny flicker of pleasure, quickly smothered by fear as he touched her skin again and felt the cold, the mortuary chill upon it. Quickly he checked her pulse and was shocked at its weak, irregular flutter. He lifted her shoulders and wrapped her in the thick greatcoat, then looked about him for his horse. It was down at the far end of the glade, grazing head down. Bare to the waist and shivering in the cold, he ran after it and led it back to the Mapane. As he stooped to lift the girl's unconscious body, he froze with shock. From above his head came a sound that ripped along his nerves and triggered his deepest instincts. It was the loud cry of an infant in distress, and he straightened swiftly and stared up the tall trunk. There was a bundle hanging in the top branches, and it twitched and swung agitatedly from side to side. "A woman and a child," the words of the dying bushman came back to Lothar. He pillowed the unconscious girl's head against the warm carcass of the lion, then jumped to catch the lowest Mapane branch. He drew himself bodily upwards and swung one leg over the branch. He climbed swiftly up to the suspended bundle and found it was a rawhide satchel. He unhooked the straps and lowered it until he could peer into the opening. A small, indignant face scowled up at him, and as it saw him, it flushed and yelled with fright. The memory of Lothar's own son assailed him so suddenly and bitterly that he winced and swayed on the high branch and then drew the kicking, yelling child more securely against his own body and smiled, a painful, lopsided smile. "That is a big voice for a small man," he whispered huskily. It never occurred to him that it might be a girl. That arrogant anger could only be male.